Okay. Judging by the white lab smock, I would guess that you're a professor of biology.
You're absolutely right. I'm actually an associate professor in two departments, in developmental and cell biology, and ecology and evolutionary biology. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of a biologist and a chemist. I'm sort of a rare bird in the sense of a biologist because I have so much chemical training in my biology.
Biology, for a lot of people, particularly people not in the sciences, mm-hmm. I was a social science major, is the scary department on campus. I mean, that's where all the people do nothing but work all day long, and, mm-hmm. and they're being lashed by their TAs and so on and so forth. Your demeanor seems to belie that. You seem like a fairly happy, cheerful individual.
Well, I think I am fairly cheerful. I have a large group of people in my laboratory. So, and most of the people who are in my laboratory are quite competent and excited about what they're doing. I mean, I don't personally believe that one has to have a leash and be slapping the students or continuously be harassing them, really, to do research. I mean, the people that I generally have in my laboratory, and this includes undergraduates, I have a large group of undergraduates in my lab. I have from times up to 7 in my lab doing actual independent basic research. And my feeling generally is that if a student or a research associate likes what they're doing, there's no real need to continuously harass them. But they do work a lot. There's no question about that. If they like what they're doing, they don't really have their set hours. They work them out. Or if it's undergraduates, they work them out around their courses. And if they're postdocs or research associates, they also work out their hours. But again, it's really up to the individual in my lab. But I do, of course, expect quality research, and I do expect them to, you know, to make some worthwhile contributions in the research.
What kind of qualities does someone need to have to be a successful researcher?
Yeah, that's really, I really don't have any definite grades, averages that I look at or anything. Let's just talk about undergraduates, because my experience was quite interesting. Because see, I was an undergraduate student in biology. I was not a pre-med. I never was a pre-med when I was at the University of Texas. I was interested in zoology. I was actually interested in frogs. I started off as a vertebrate zoologist, interested in going in the field, looking at them, and doing taxonomy, classifying them. Then I had the opportunity to work in a lab, but I was hired primarily to clean up the lab. And my grades were not outstanding. I was never really an outstanding biologist in undergraduate school. I wasn't bad, but I wasn't great. I mean, I was B average student in biology. But when I had the opportunity to get into the laboratory, certain skills came out that were, no matter how much schooling you've had, it just came out. I mean, I was very good in doing laboratory research. I had had a lot of, I guess it's common sense, quickly picking up techniques, and just enjoying what you were doing. And those are the kinds of, sort of the motivation. This is the kinds of things that I look in students. I generally, when I look at them, I look at their GPA. I mean, one looks at that, but that is not really the determining factor in my decision as to what is the selection criteria that I use in what's going to be a good researcher. And most of the time, I'm pretty good at picking out motivated, interested students that, if given the right kind of input, can develop and will do some creative work. I give, for example, one student, which I never will forget him. He was a C student here at Irvine when he first came to see me when he was a sophomore. Very quiet, very much to himself, but very persistent in wanting to work in my lab. So I was, of course, thinking in the very traditional way that we generally think, you know, well, high GPA, this will be an indication of a good researcher. Well, most of the time, this is not the case. I would say that this doesn't necessarily hold up. And the student turned out to be one of my best students that I've ever had in my lab. He later went to medical school. He's now in medical school, published two articles with me as an undergraduate. And it was primarily just from, I think, his persistence and his wanting to show that he could do research. I mean, there was nothing there to me that said this is going to be a great research scientist. But once I got him into my lab, and one, I noticed he was very disciplined, very organized, and he was creative. In other words, he went beyond the kind of assignment that I would give him. I would say, well, here's, you do this and that. And most students will go just to that point. He would go beyond, ask questions, and then continue. And I think this is something that he was a late bloomer, Mike, in this case for me. I mean, there was no obvious thing there to me that indicated he would be a good scientist. And after his senior year, I tried everything in my power to keep him in my lab. But the medical schools quickly grabbed him, so I lost him. But, you know, I don't, you know, basically the way I go about when I talk with undergraduate students, I feel I'm very concerned about undergraduate students. And I really feel that one way that I would like to get, and I'd like to get quality, good, outstanding students in my lab, because it costs me a lot of money to have them in my lab. I mean, it's research money, federal monies. And generally what I do is I have a series of things that I look for, motivation, et cetera, and I do it by interviews. I talk with students. I get down to, you know, not to a very personal level, but to the point where the student feels very at ease and is willing to talk about what he's thinking or she is thinking. And how well they can communicate with me and how much of an effort they make to read up in the area of research that I'm doing is an indication of motivation and excitement, you know. And a lot of it, and also students develop a lot from there once you get them into the laboratory, because once they get in there, they now are exposed to a lot of professionals. Since I have a lot of postdocs and graduate students, then their attitude also begins to change. I mean, they no longer are just a little undergraduate student. They're now part of this research complex, and their ideas are valued. And if they're good, they do well. So I don't have any definite criteria.
What about undergraduate students who might have you for a course but only intend to go as far as the baccalaureate? Assuming that they want to get out into the world and do something else.
So in other words, don't want to get into research?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, those students, of course, I'm also very concerned. My major thing with those kinds of students and what I try to do, it's very difficult to do it in class, because in class you're limited. You know, I teach the large classes, Bio 90 and Bio 101A. Well, I used to teach 101A. Now it's Bio 90. It's difficult to talk about careers for those students who don't want to pursue a medical career or health, or don't want to get into research or graduate school, but who would like to get a bachelor's degree in biology and then get a job. Well, the thing that I've been trying to do with a lot of students is meeting with some of the students, and I've met with student groups, to talk about what is available to you as an undergraduate with just a bachelor's degree. What can you do with that in biology? And the things that I try to do is talk to them about the latest developments that are going in the area of biology, in which they could get an undergraduate degree and directly go into this kind of corporate research. I mean, this is the thing that I'm thinking about. With the opening of this, all of this new sort of genetic engineering corporations, and they're opening up left and right, there's a great demand for biologists at all levels. I mean, biologists from bachelor's to PhDs. Now, unfortunately, a lot of those students with bachelor's degree are going to be primarily at the sort of a technical level. But nevertheless, they will probably be bringing in salaries equivalent or very close to that of an engineer who now gets a degree in engineering. In other words, I think an engineering student gets approximately 19 or 20,000. That's for the 4 years of undergraduate training. Mm-hmm. While a biologist, I think there's going to be a great demand for these kinds of individuals. And And if they want to get into that kind of business with just a bachelor's degree, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities. So I basically what I try to do is make them aware of what are the newest developments going on in biology, which could make use of people with bachelor's degrees. So that's one area. The other area, and this is one that I am very, very concerned about, is, of course, the quality of biology teachers in the high schools that we can have in junior highs. Since, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but in the last 5 years, there's been a really great decline in the quality of science provided in high schools and in junior highs. And this is seen by the undergraduates who are coming to our schools now. In other words, just teachers who are not that well trained or lack an updating on biology, and the lack of good hands-on experiments or science, they can do science. So I do this a lot also with minority students, and particularly a lot of minority students who are bilingual. The great need for those kinds of science teachers in the school districts around here. This is my concern because, especially among the minority population, that we're finding out that schools that are predominantly minority, science is not stressed and students are not encouraged to pursue sciences. So I'm very concerned about that. So I think that, this is an area that quality. When they get their biology degree and they want to go into teaching, for example, this is a great need and a great area that that will always have a need for science teachers. And so this is what I do for those who are going into their bachelor's degrees. Just making them aware that there are opportunities out there. They're not great paying opportunities. I mean, I do make it apparent to those students who are in biology that it's getting to the point now that a master's or a PhD is the only way that maybe you'll get a good paying job. I mean, bachelor's, thanks to this new genetic engineering, et cetera, there will be probably a lot of opportunities, but it will still be not at a decision-making level, but more at a technical level.
Mm-hmm. There are two things that you mm-hmm. mentioned in the last couple of minutes that touch on social, ethical, mm-hmm. moral questions, mm-hmm. the whole Genentech,
right.
genetic engineering
right.
sort
right.
of thing, mm-hmm. and the idea of bringing something back into the community mm-hmm. that you take, as you move out of the community, you learn something, and then you
yeah.
have some sort of responsibility
right.
to give something
mm-hmm.
back. How do you inspire that in someone, or what kinds of things? I always got
yeah.
the idea that the people in the humanities, the people in the social sciences, we sort of have the monopoly on social conscience.
Yeah, right, right.
And in physics and engineering and biology, they were hitting the books and they were studying and they were totally oblivious to everything else going on.
Right.
Obviously, that's not true. And I have some friends who were undergraduates along
uh-huh.
with me. That helped in a rather vocal way to get me across that, dispel that rumor. But how do you go about instilling that kind of thing?
In other words, some kind of are we talking about a consciousness of what is going on? I mean, what can science contribute to the community? Or how can you, as a scientist, are we talking about scientists primarily?
I think, yeah.
As a scientist, whether minority or non-minority, how can you contribute to your community?
Right, and feel that sort of responsibility.
Well, let me tell you the way some of the things that I am involved with as a scientist and as a Chicano is how I, and let me just talk first about the minority population and then we can talk about the non-minority, sort of the ways that I try to do this. I mean, the way I do it is whenever I talk with minority students, and I generally do this when I go to high schools. I lecture a lot at high schools and junior highs, primarily around this area, because I'm very concerned with the lack of students from the Santa Ana area, for example, or, you know, just 15 minutes from UCI that do not come to UCI for science. I mean, here's, I think, a very good science school, but we're not getting students, in particular the minority population. From Santa Ana, which is 15 minutes away, I don't think we've had one or two students enroll in the School of Biology. So something is terribly wrong. So what I've been doing is going to them, and the way I generally sort of get their consciousness perked up is I first talk about science from a very historical perspective. In other words, to them I talk about the long history of science among minority populations, and I go back even to the indigenous roots. And you can do this very easily with science. I mean, science is something that is, you can touch it on from physics, Mayan, Aztec, mathematics, botanical, the pharmaceutical. There's a whole good history there. So one of the things that I try to do is I try to establish some kind of historical perspective so that the students, first of all, start seeing, thinking of themselves or saying to themselves, well, Jesus, you know, hey, there is a long history of science in our race or in our ethnic group. And I think it goes to any ethnic group. But in particular, I'm talking about the Chicano Latino population where I'm primarily focusing on. Then I do it this way. And then I go through a series, and this is, I primarily do it by lecturing to the students. And then later on, I bring them to my labs, but I'll tell you how I do that. But by lecturing to them and then getting into informal discussions on ailments and disease and problems that they think are particular to the Latin or to the Chicano community, from, for example, congenital defects, reproduction in the female, some of the problems that might be particular to that ethnic group because of either nutrition or other exposure to poisons or et cetera. So, I mean, and how the great need for minority scientists and medical and the health profession that can, you know, come back to the community and teach the community about this thing. I also do it by raising this consciousness. I mean, in other words, what I am trying to do is get the minority population excited about science, but also to be aware that as a scientist and as a Chicano scientist, they also have a commitment to the community to, one, educate them about certain kinds of problems that are health problems. And being committed and sensitive, they also are very aware of traditional methods used in curing and et cetera. In other words, taking some of the modern medicine and traditional medicine, for example, in curing using it in the curing processes. I talk about this with the students, and the students quickly can relate to me because this is part of their culture. I also do something else. Is I teach in Saturday College. This is a program set up by UCI, primarily by EOP, in which minority or non-minority students are brought to the university on Saturdays, and I lecture to the students. And again, what I'm trying to do here is, again, tell them the importance of the historical aspects. And then I also bring in contemporary scientists, primarily minority scientists, who are very active doing good science, good quality research scientists, but they still haven't forgotten who they are, where they come from, and how they can contribute to the community. And most of it, I think, comes from not only just role models, but how one as an individual can motivate and use different criteria to stimulate students to pursue certain areas in science. I'm primarily concerned with science, so I'm always using different criteria to say, hey, you are really a great scientist, and you have the motivation, you have the discipline. You don't have the principles, but you can learn those. All you got to do is get yourself into some kind of a discipline. So this is more of the way I try to interact with the students, you know, lecturing to them, participating in a Saturday college, and then bringing them to the laboratory and where we have one-to-one interactions and discussions. And then I even go a little bit farther. This summer, for example, I hire students, minority students from high schools. I generally get four of them. And the idea here is to demystify the university first, demystify science. I mean, have them interacting with other scientists in the lab and find out that, Jesus, these guys drop flasks. I mean, these guys are just, Jesus, they're so human that it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And but also, more than anything else, get them to start thinking, you know, conceptualize. I think that's, and I think at some point you realize, gee, I'm thinking. So that's sort of, you know, runabout way how I try to get students to sort of, not necessarily go back to the community, but realize where they come from and that there is a great history to where they're coming from and that they can contribute a lot more. With this kind of a perspective, I think this kind of a perspective builds up confidence, you know, and that's what it does. And I think that's what a lot of undergraduate students, minority and non-minority students, have when they come to the university. They just, nobody has helped them or really, and I think you can help students to build that self-confidence, that ability to know, well, you know, how much can you handle? And yes, I can handle so far and I can be successful, you know, but I think a lot of students just never get that. And I try to build on that.
Mm-hmm. If you had a son or daughter who was of college age,
mm-hmm.
and you were to say, I think you should go to UCI because, how would you finish that sentence? I think you should go to UCI because. Or, well, I suppose it's a fair question to ask. Would you say, I think you should go to UCI?
If I had a daughter or son, and, you know, wanted them to go to the university, you know, I don't think I would say to him, you should go to UCI. I think what I would say is I would anticipate that you would look into the University of California and see what it has to offer. Now, if I think you wanted to pursue a degree in the medical profession, the health profession, I think Irvine would provide that opportunity. The only thing that I would keep that student keenly aware of is the fact that unlike other universities, and I attended, like, for example, the University of Texas, I feel that there would be a great lacking in other, I mean, they would not get the kind of liberal education that I think a student should get. I mean, I think they would, no question that they would, if they would go through a biology track, they would be very competitive for a medical profession. But I would be a little bit concerned on their sense of their sort of their political awareness and their appreciation of the fine arts and et cetera. Because I think here at UCI, those areas which are very important have, for the biologist, are sort of, they're kept so busy that they're peripheral. And it's unfortunate because I think they played a very important role in you know, cultural identity, no matter who you are. I mean, white, Chicano, black. I mean, and I think that hurts. So I would be a little bit concerned with that. And I would tell my student, my son or daughter, that if that's what they wanted to do, that they must be aware that there are some drawbacks. And because of the commuter type of atmosphere here and the unfortunate thing that the sort of the fine arts, which has a lot to offer, is not strongly supported, I think, by the university. You know? I mean, in other words, it's not integrated into, I mean, art as part of science is there, you know, but it's not that well integrated. So I would make my daughter or son, if they wanted to pursue a science track, aware of that there might be a lack in there. And but it doesn't mean it's not there. I mean, it would, in most cases, students again, those students who are sort of more assertive, quote, more aggressive, would get that information. And it would come either from, you know, from interaction with other people who have a broader view of education, or their parents would say, well, gee, why don't you go take some fine arts, or why don't you look into this? You know, it might make you, you know, do better in your sciences, which I think it does, you know. But I think that's sort of a drawback that UCI would have if daughter or son were to pursue a biology career. That's it. I see that as a, I think it, it's unfortunate at UCI. I really think. I think that I would like to see a really student community here. I don't think it's here, and it's lacking.
I've had a similar experience. I mean, if for no other reason than there was a lot of confusion about what is it that them scientists really do anyway.
Yeah, right.
Amongst people in the social sciences and fine arts majors who said, "What is it that everybody else?"
We have to get away from the fact that, I mean, science, we're not just training, you know, technocrats or biotechnocrats. I mean, we want to have great scientists. I mean, that's what we want to produce, but we want sensitive scientists, and scientists that, you know, who are sensitive to the great cultural diversity that we have here in California. And you're not going to get it just by taking biology courses. I mean, you're going to have to look into certain areas and see how that kind of information will make it easier. I mean, I would think if you're a medical doctor and dealing with people, I mean, I think the medical profession, a lot of it is interaction, you know. It's a one-to-one. Unless you're going into research, it's a different situation where maybe you don't have that much. But a lot of it is socializing and communication and understanding. And I think this is something that students, you know, going into the biology should be aware of. I mean, that they should definitely be aware of courses like that are available, or individuals that can provide that mm-hmm. kind of input.
This has been real helpful. I really appreciate you taking the time out for doing this.
Yeah, you have any more questions? I'd be glad to answer any other ones. What are some typical characteristics of a successful UCI student? That was an interesting question. What are typical characteristics of a success?
I didn't write those questions.
Yeah, no, that's...
I always had a curiosity when I saw that, too. I said, well, what's typical in some ways, you know, what might be a typical characteristic for a good UCI student who is a dance major might not be a typical...
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. I mean, there's no question that the humanities, social relations, and the fine arts, I mean, I think the students, I mean, I really think they have a different perception of the world that they're in compared to a lot of the science, really focused type of scientists, you know, who are just in one track. And success is it's so different for each one of them. I mean, so. Okay.
Pretty much takes
care. Well, I hope that helps a little.
I certainly do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Time.
Take care.
You too.